And now, I would like to introduce Mr. Paul B., our main speaker from San Diego.
That's a big crowd. I didn't know this room would hold 1,000 people. Alcoholic Paul Brenner. It's good to be here, and it's great to be sober. First and foremost, I'd like to welcome the new people to Alcoholics Anonymous. Those of you that are here for your first time, your second time, your third time, or like me, perhaps your fourth time, or in your first 30 days. Are you telling me to move the mic, really? Okay. I can take direction. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. My hope for you is that you find in Alcoholics Anonymous what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is a solution to a lifelong problem I've had, named Paul Brenner, really. My own worst enemy. That being said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. The hoop you have to jump through, or the hoop I've had to jump through, was much, much bigger than I thought it was. I thought I had this little pigeonhole of Alcoholics Anonymous I had to get through, and it's just this great, big, broad, roomy, inclusive. Gives me goosebumps to think about it. Happy birthday to Mika, Leanne, and Richard Go, class of 2014, or 2004. That's what happens when I try and be cool. I'm not cool. I'm really not. I'm old and I need glasses. Now, I'd like to thank my roommate. When I asked him how my shirt looked, he said, "It looks good. It matches your hair." Bro, the shirt's gray. Yes. My current sobriety date, and I hope it's my last sobriety date, is August the 12th of 2004. My home group is La Mesa Men's. My sponsor, you guys ready for this? There's going to be a big ooh in the crowd, is a guy named Darwin. See? But he works for me, and that relationship has been long with a little sabbatical. We're able to communicate, and that man is, I've done lots of fifth steps, but the fifth step I did with that man was the one that changed my life, and I'll get to that. Sean. Thanks. I really would have much rather sat and listened to you than do this myself. You did a great job. I related a lot, and that identification kind of calmed my heart a little bit. I don't like doing this. I'm not the guy that you call to speak in a meeting. I'm not the guy that you call to deliver the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the guy you call if you want help finding seashells at night, at low tide, and with any luck, maybe we'll get to that. I'm the guy you call that if you want to get stood up on Thanksgiving or Christmas. But my head tells me I'm not the guy that speaks at Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reality about that is that's an absolute lie. My experience, in consideration of what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me in my life, taking that pause and owning what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me gives me goosebumps. It has absolutely changed my life, and I'm here to tell you it can change yours too. And I promise you, like I said earlier, the hoop you have to jump through is much, much bigger than you think it is. So that being said, I got some 43 minutes to kill. I had really, really hoped that I could be entertaining. I mean, you guys are here for like an hour. It'd be nice to laugh, and so I'll do my best, but I'm really not very funny. I would like to be spiritual, but I'm really not. I'm kind of selfish and self-centered and self-seeking and driven by 1,000 forms of fear and self-delusion. I wanted to be funny. I wanted to be spiritual. I'm already married, so I can't pick up on any newcomer chicks. There was a part in a previous sobriety, but that's... I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father was alcoholic. His father was alcoholic. All my dad's four brothers. Grandma had seven kids, so five guys, two girls. Safe to say, everybody was alcoholic, especially the males. My uncles get found in vans parked on a side street in Escondido, dead for days at a time. My own father, single car crash on his way out to see his my brother's oldest now. So you're either in AA or you need AA. And I can't say that I blame my alcoholism on that upbringing. You know, that upbringing helped me be a maladjusted little kid. But nowhere in that household at any point in time did anybody set me down and say, you're fat, you're dumb, and you're ugly. But those were truths that I would fight you to death because I knew. I knew. Nobody set me down and told me I was fat, dumb, and ugly. One of my earliest childhood memories, it's a funny story, I like telling it. We're over at some in-laws for a holiday, and I come out of their shower, and I'm on my little tidy-whities, and I walk by a full-length mirror, and I catch a view of myself sideways, and I look, and I think, oh, my God, you look like a chicken. Nobody is ever going to love you. And I'm like 6, 7 years old. It's kind of funny when you're 6 or 7. It's tragic when you're 30. You know, those are the old, that's just one example of an old idea I brought about who and what Paul Brenner is. And those are some of the earliest that didn't involve any kind of family pet or anything. So what I'm trying to say is I grew up feeling separate, different, and apart from. I didn't fit. I didn't belong. Life seemed to fit like a wet wool sweater that was just itchy and scratchy. I spent all my time comparing my insides to your outsides. That's just the way it was. And it doesn't matter who you are, what your outsides look like. When I'm in that mindset, 30 years ago, yesterday, today, right now, if I'm in that mindset, when I compare my insides to your outsides, I lose. I lose because I tell myself a story about how you know, you understand, you've got it figured out. Draw a card. Your card's going to be higher than mine. And I know the truth about me is I don't know. I don't have it figured out. I'm scared. God, tell the truth? I hate me. I'm dirty. I'm vile. A big one on the fifth step was unlovable. Man, I am just unlovable. And that's me on the natch. And mind you, nobody set me down and said, hey, this is how to think, this is how to act. That's just the way I felt on the natch. I was a late bloomer. I took my first drink the summer between 6th and 7th grade. And I was over at my brother's house. I ditched our, when was Halloween? Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that? So I ditched whatever meeting we went to, and I hung out at my brother's and handed out candy and did the Halloween thing. But I was watching 9, 10, and 11-year-olds come up and trick-or-treat, and it was just blowing my mind one more time that's when I started drinking. And by that time, my mom had divorced my biological father, and my stepdad was a pretty much a drug addict. It's cool, though, because I knew where the keys to the safe were, and he, with my help, smoked about a quarter pound of weed a month. So what I'd done is I'd stole some weed from him, and I traded it to one of the older kids for a handle of vodka. And we sat underneath the trees on the grass at the elementary school we went to and drank some vodka. And I wish I could tell you it. You know, I know it went down hot. It went down really hot. I remember chasing the kid around for a while because I thought that he poured rubbing alcohol in there, that, you know, this can't be vodka. This is something else. I wish I could tell you that I instantly knew and it was my solution. I don't remember feeling that way, but I do remember that every day thereafter, up until the first time I got sober, I was either loaded or trying to get loaded in some way, shape, or form. It's an open meeting. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in our singleness of purpose, but I also believe in full disclosure, and my alcoholism has no bounds. Alcohol was there, first, last, in the middle, always. But in this short life, I have treated my alcoholism with everything I could get my hands on. I've even treated my alcoholism some pretty unique ways while claiming sober. I wasn't getting loaded, but I was doing some pretty weird stuff. So that being said, when you start drinking going into junior high, not a whole lot happens. I would like to identify the first time that I actually tried to stop drinking. High school was really a blur. I remember dropping out of high school because the guy I was running around with, I was convinced he was a narc, and I was gonna go to jail. So I dropped out, and 2 or 3 days later, we're watching the nightly news, and wouldn't you know it, there's all my high school buddies getting loaded into San Diego Police Department cars at Patrick Henry High School. And I was a pretty quick study. My parents had been trying to get me to do a variety of things. So I said, hey, you know that campus life thing? There was this Youth for Christ program. And I said, you know, I'd really, really like to start doing that. And I came home from the Youth for Christ outing after we took some mushrooms. And, and actually, two different nights. The campus life thing and mushrooms was not the night that I came home from campus life, and the STPD cars were in our driveway. So they were there. They wanted to arrest me. They had a whole bunch of charges, and they were all true, more or less. And somehow or another, I got to stay home. But that next day, I didn't want to drink. And I'm like 17. And I talked to a normal friend that lived a few houses down, and he was going to meet me, and we were going to play football with the normal kids. And I don't know whether I was supposed to meet him at 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, whatever it was. I got there about 15 minutes early. And I'm in my head. My head's just grinding on me, just grinding on me. And I know when they get there, I'm not going to be able to catch the ball. I'm not going to be able to throw the ball. I'm probably going to run into a tree. You know, now it's like a whole 30 seconds has gone by, and I'm coming out of my skin. And make a long story short, I knew a house down the street, the guy that I used to fish for beer from. He lived in his mother's garage. And I was going to go see, God, I can't remember his name now. But anyways, I was going to go see him because I can't play football with the normal kids, 17. And I get over there, and he and this other dude are fighting over a hypodermic needle full of something. And it just hits me. Holy cow. I wasn't going to drink today, and I'm over here about ready to fight for that hype. And I go home, and my stepdad says, man, what happened? You know, it looks like you've seen a ghost. And I said, I can't quit drinking. And they had caught me countless times. But anyway, fast forward. I'm going to check myself into rehab. Fortunately, I checked into rehab shortly before sentencing. And Scripps McDonald Center at the time had a 30-day inpatient. Somehow I got to stay there for 45 days. Perhaps I was a special case. But I got out of rehab, and I didn't get to go back to regular school. I had to go to a school run by the county sheriff's department for a little while. And then I petitioned, whatever, went back to Patrick Henry. And that's where Dave P. and I met. I graduated from having a regular counselor to seeing the senior counselor guy, the head counselor, I guess they call him. It's a trip. The dude's sober. And he goes to a meeting that I frequented. It was really rad running into him. But he introduced us, and we palled around, and we went to a lot of meetings. And we drank a lot of coffee, and we ate a lot of French fries with whatever gravy back in 87. The first time I got sober was June 6th of 1987. And I ran around AA until I was 21. And covered a lot of good ground, got a job, had a little car, had my own place. Credit cards, but AA just wasn't working for me. Really what I wanted is I wanted to go to bars, and I wanted to be cool, and I wanted to pick up on chicks. So somewhere Halloween 1991-92, I started drinking again, and by Christmas I was living in the back of that truck. And We ran so hard and went so fast that that we cut the front rotors in half. I was going so fast for so long I couldn't stop. I just getting anything, everything, all the time, loaded as much as I could be. And it still amazes me today if you think about that, the rotor on the front of a car. The brake pad's gone. The little metal that holds the brake pad's gone. And now you're stopping it with the caliper. And the caliper pushes all the way through. So we were driving around the beach tweaking balls, wondering why everybody was looking at us. And it's because every time you come to a stop, man, it's like a train. And that was the best I could do. Fortunately, I had an intervention by the San Diego Police Department. And I don't like jail. They put me in jail. I'm in a drunk tank. I do like 10 push-ups. And then I'm redundant push-ups. That's too much work. I'm going to get my ass kicked anyway. And it's just... I'm too pretty for jail. I mean, I don't think so. But when I get in there, it becomes very obvious. I'm way too pretty for jail. So thus begins my my second sobriety, and I was fortunate to get plugged into a really, really good group. Man, these guys were solid. They were solid, and I was tricked into the sponsorship. The guy had moved from Vegas to San Diego, and he knew I'd been around before, and Old Town Speakers was our haunt, and he asked if I would show him around. Tricky bastard. And so, yeah, sure, I'll show you around. And some of the best times of my life running with that crew. Took the steps. Never got all 12 done. Had a pretty good experience with the fifth step. And unfortunately for me, life comes fast. I get sober. It doesn't feel like it. But success comes quick to me, and that's not a good thing for an alcoholic of my variety. I need a backpack and a bus pass. So what happened is I hit 5 years. And I got a trophy wife, and I got a big truck, and I got an $85,000 a year job, and I got a little rental with a white picket fence. And hey, man, I don't have time. You guys are going to Pacific Group once a month. We're driving to Vegas to see people take cakes. I got a baby on the way, dude. I can't freaking do all that AA. I'm good. There's a line in the big book. I don't quote the big book much. I'm not going to pick it up and try and find it because it would be embarrassing. But it says something to the effect of, we have learned much from what you have to offer. And I had. I was not going to go to the lengths that you had. I'm not going to. And I stayed dry for, God, 18 months, almost 2 years. And I'm so grateful for that experience. Not for what happened, but for the experience of what I learned. And what I learned is that my character... The depths at which my what's the right word, shittiness, because that's all I got right now, the depths at which my poor behavior can go have nothing to do with alcohol. Absolutely nothing. I was stone cold sober. Came home from work, you know, big career job, and I don't know what she did, man. For all I know, she put a knife straight side up in the dishwasher, because that still annoys me. But it was like World War III, you know, and we end up playing tug of war with the baby because I had said some things and I can't talk to her that way, and she's going to take her kid and she's going to leave, and it's, you're not going to take my kid. And then, you know, kind of a reality like, holy cow, you know, you're you're pulling on a baby, you know, you ought to not do that. And I'm not the brightest guy, but she loads... My wife at the time loads our oldest daughter up in the car and starts to drive away. And the weight and the reality of what's going on hits me. And I'm sober. I haven't drank. I haven't drank in a long time. And I like to break things. God, I like to break stuff when I'm like that. And I'll break your stuff, but I especially like to break my stuff. And if I can bleed in the process, God, that's even better, because now I can relish in the broken blood and how pathetic and just... So as the Jeep is driving by, I turn and I punch it. And why not hit a car? Maybe hit the metal, maybe hit the glass. That big badass guy I am. Hit the glass and break the glass, right? So I did. I punched out the passenger window. Guess what was on the other side of the passenger window in a car seat? Yeah, my daughter. my daughter. Sabrina's 18 now. And if you get a chance, maybe, you know, you guys can meet her and she'll show you a little scar. Got a little scar on her leg. She remembers. That's the shit my dad did. That's the shit I grew up with. I didn't want to do that. I got to call the guys and get plugged back in. And I call and I go to two meetings and it's weak. I'm just not surrendered. I'm not there. It's not that bad. It's not going to happen again. Not going to happen again. So I wrap up the largest construction job I ever did. I was on this site for, 2.5 years. We did a $13, $15 million job. But I was into it, and it seemed like a big thing. So the inspector signed me off, and the inspector was an alcoholic, and it was fun being sober and watching the alcoholic inspector run around. And so he signs the job off, and he says, "Hey, I'm gonna go get a 6-pack of beer. Can I come back to the office and drink?" I'm like, yeah, sure. I got some paperwork. Don't worry about it. Come on back. And so he came back, and he sits down, and I'm over there doing my paperwork, and he cracks a 6-pack, and he goes, "You want a beer?" I just finished a $22 million job. Now, mind you, I told you it was like $11 million. But anyway, I just finished this huge job. I can have a beer. Let's have a beer. So we had a beer. And thus launches, another trip to the asylum, effectively. The wife says I came home the next day with a case. Chances are her perception is a little clearer than mine. I think it was a 12-pack. It could have been a case. Nonetheless, I drank the whole thing. And daily drinking right then, right there. And I don't know. The only success I've ever had, the only jobs I've ever had, the only productivity I've ever had is when I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a wife and a kid and another one on the way, and I'm drinking. So fast forward a few months, and we're living in the parking lot down in South Mission Beach, and I'm trying to convince her that we're not homeless. We're vacationing. It's the summertime. We're in San Diego. I got a little $200 travel trailer. It doesn't have any, I think the propane worked, which is because you need propane because the fridges will run on propane in the RV, so you keep your beer cold. And then you can cook. I don't think the 12-volt system worked. It didn't have a generator. And we're in that parking lot, and I'm trying to convince her that we're not homeless. We're vacationing. I forgot the seashell story. After my first sobriety, what were we, 22, 23 maybe? I'm looking, huh? All right, so I'm in my early 20s. I've been sober for a little while. Now I'm drinking again. And when I got loaded the second time and I went to that dealer of outside issues, she actually suggested I was better off sober and I probably shouldn't be talking to her. But anyway, I was running around with my sister, and she had this, her and this dealer chick had this affinity for seashells. So if you're my connect and you like something and I can get it for free, I'm going to find you some. And they used to, for whatever reason, used to like to do it at night at low tide, and we'd be out there with flashlights. So we're down, hey man, it's what was going on and that's what we're doing, I'm all in. So the point of the story is full flight from reality. And we're out there looking for seashells. I forget exactly. They play volleyball there now. Maybe it's Mariner's Point or something. The roller coaster's over there and this big sand lot. And I find one. I find the one that she likes. And I go running up and I give it to her. She's like, "Rad, good job. Find me another one. I'll give you a jib." I don't know what time it was. It was dark. But I put the flashlight in my mouth, and I started looking. And when the sun came up, God is my witness, people showed up to play volleyball. And I look up from a hole. That's my best thinking. That's me without Alcoholics Anonymous. So I wanted to get that story out. Usually it goes over better. You guys are a tough crowd. How many people you talked to dug a hole with a flashlight looking for seashells in the middle of the night? You too? Where did I leave off before I digressed? Way after digging the hole. Let's get sober. Yeah, we're vacationing. You know, there's a line in the Big Book. I shouldn't try and quote lines from the Big Book. But it talks about the chilling vapor of loneliness. Man, I identified with that when I was in that parking lot. Trying to go to sleep at night with all the, at that time, when I was sober 4 years the first time, a little over five the second time. So I had 9 years of AA, and I'm trying to live in a parking lot and convince people that I'm not homeless. I'm on vacation. What the fuck? My head knew, man. My head knew that I was in the wrong place doing the wrong thing, and it took a lot to get me to go to sleep. And it took a lot to get me up. So let's fast forward to August the 11th of 2004. I wake up and the head's on me and she's not there and neither are the kids. There's Coors, there's vodka, there's marijuana, there's barbiturates. And by the way, I quit doing that controlled substance stuff. I was like 6 months away from that. So I could clearly say that they were the problem. I had my stuff together because I'm only drinking and smoking a little bit of weed. That's not even like you're sober if you're only drinking and smoking weed. So I wake up with Coors and some marijuana, and the head's still on me. And then I realize it's disability check day. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing. They don't deliver mail in the parking lot. And the truck that I had in that previous sobriety, I hadn't made a payment on it, and God knows how long, but not many collection people are looking for trucks and parking lots at Mission Bay. So my brother worked at a Ford dealership, and I had manipulated him into fixing something for me. So I was in the parking lot. I didn't have the truck, and it was time to get the disability check. And there was another homeless guy there whose wife had a car, and we borrowed her car. And went to the post office in El Cajon because I'm getting my mail general delivery. That's where alcoholics, or that's where alcoholism takes me, a parking lot and general delivery. So we get the mail, cash the check at a liquor store, and end up at, God, I wish I could remember the name of the bar. Seven gin and tonics later, it's time to leave, and I'm pretty lit because all I've been doing is drinking all day. And we're able to, I remember calling my brother and telling him to park the truck outside the parking lot and just leave the keys under the mat because I couldn't see him, man. We're not doing that. But hey, thanks. I appreciate the favor. You know, thanks for fixing my car. We get back to the beach and I've got to try and put the trailer on the truck. And if you've ever tried to put a trailer on a truck, you got this little ball and you got this little hitch thing that you got to try and line the two up. And that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. She was there. She was up. So I knew she had something. And I just need a little help. I just need a little accelerant so I can connect the dots. And I asked. I said, hey, you know, can you hook me up? I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean? I don't know what I'm talking about. Look, I got to get the truck moved. We're going to get arrested if it's still here and it's got to go. And I don't know what you're talking about. So I asked once. And I said, please. I'm out of skills, resources. So I do the only thing I know how to do. I put my hands on her and I start choking her and tossing her around and trying to get what I want. And that was the last. I'm glad to say that's the last time that ever happened. It wasn't the first time. And I wish I could say that was a defining moment for me, but it really wasn't. It really wasn't. It was just another day. And I'm homeless in this parking lot with 9 years experience in AA behind me trying to convince myself it's okay. And I'm choking this woman out because she won't give me drugs. Not just this woman. My wife, the mother of my two kids, are right there. And fortunately, somebody heard her screams and they called the cops. And she went one way and I went the other. I guess adrenaline was pumping at that point because I was able to get the truck hooked up to the trailer and we were moving. I'm not very smart. I only moved it like two parking lots up. You know how the beach has got different parking lots, you know? And so I proceeded to pass out and there's a bang, bang, bang on the door and it's the harbor police, and they want to talk. And I'll never forget inside the trailer, right? All the shades pulled and everything, you know. You don't want to talk to me. You're not my friends. It's like, what? Open the door. We want to talk. You don't want to talk to me, man. Stupid. So I opened the door, and I was right, man. They didn't want to talk. They didn't want to talk. And I got a real issue with cops, and I've never gotten anything I didn't deserve. Never. There's never a ticket I got I didn't deserve. And you know, being yanked out of that trailer and face down on the ground with one boot on my neck and a knee on my back, man, I deserved every bit of that. Absolutely. Without a doubt. So anyway, off to jail we go. And I'm in jail. I think I did a little 5 days because I'm such a wussy when it comes to being in jail. But it's important for me to identify. I think it's important. You may not think anything of it. But day one, I'm a victim for sure. Day two, I'm counting my money and how much alcohol do I have in the trailer and how much drugs do I have. And day three, a little bit of conscience, not much. Day four, make a phone call. I call my brother. He's like, dude, Alcoholics Anonymous. Day five, I get OR'd. And it was pretty humiliating in the courtroom, that sentencing process. It really was. That's not the... I had no plans of taking everything my biological father taught me and just kicking it up a notch. Or I shouldn't say taught me, showed me, whatever. I'm not a victim, man. I'm an absolute volunteer. But I did not want to repeat that behavior. That was nothing that felt good. So now I get OR'd, and I know the only answer, the only way I can get through it is, it's really like a 10 minutes to get sober? You guys need like a 15-minute or a get sober sign. Talk to the committee. It's like, hey, you might want to get sober now. Really? I got to wrap up 13 years of the best time of my life in 10 minutes? So I come to Alcoholics Anonymous not to get sober. I've been to Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. It doesn't work for me. And I'm here to tell you, Alcoholics Anonymous works. It works 100% of the time for 100% of the people. It never didn't work for me. Give me goosebumps to stand here and own that in front of you right now. The whole body's lit up. I love it. I love it. Alcoholics Anonymous works. I quit working Alcoholics Anonymous each and every time. So I come to Alcoholics Anonymous this time believing some lies, right? When I came 13 years ago, I was not convinced Alcoholics Anonymous worked. I was convinced that AA wouldn't work for me. I knew it might work for you, but it ain't going to work for me. And I'm really not here to get sober anyway. I want the wife and kids back. So I get out of jail, and I launch on a course of rigorous action. It's not outlined in any books. I'm not going to find it anywhere except right here. And they gave me a few simple directions. They wanted me to do this and do that. And I'm like, all right, if you guys want me to enroll in domestic violence, then I'm going to enroll in parenting. And I'm going to enroll in individual counseling. And I'm going to, I thought there was another one, the DV class, individual counseling, parenting. Anyway, that was my course the first 9 months. I got a little sponsor. I was active at Midweek Men's. And the guy's watching me bounce around. And his advice is stay away. Stay away, stay away, stay away. God, I can't believe I got 9 minutes to wrap this up. The sponsor's telling me to leave her alone. And that's just not fair, man. I spent way too much time being drunk. The sponsor's telling me to leave her alone. The counselor's telling me to leave me alone. State of California's telling me to leave her alone. And it took me about, I don't know, maybe a year. I decided I would leave her alone. And I would work on Alcoholics. I would do Alcoholics Anonymous for the sake of doing Alcoholics Anonymous. And miraculous things happened. I got plugged in with a different sponsor. I started taking the steps. I got an ultimatum from that sponsor to, and really, first off, in full disclosure, the only reason I got that sponsor is because Dave asked me to speak at a meeting, and I could not get to the podium and lie and say I didn't have a sponsor, so I had to ask, I got to be my sponsor. We did that fourth and fifth step, and the only reason I got the fourth step done was an ultimatum. He said, you blow me off twice, either have it done this day on this time or find another sponsor. And I don't want to look that kind of bad in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I did his four-step. I thought it was weak. I thought it was trite. I thought it was lame. And it may have been, but the fifth step was a very, very powerful experience. And what I learned was that there was a story I'd been telling about myself, and I could stop telling myself that story anytime I wanted. I just had to come to some new ideas. And we did that. At about 5 years sober, Kari and I got remarried. And we were able to buy a little house and raise those two girls. And she had a friend of hers that was in the battered woman shelter with her that had been struggling during that 5 years that we were getting sober. By the way, she had the same sobriety. She has the same sobriety date I do. I went to jail. She went to battered woman shelter. And we both, on our own accord, decided we needed to get sober. And that was key for me the first couple of years. I mean, when I finally got plugged into the sponsor and started taking that direction, leave her alone. She was doing the wrong program anyway. But that was imperative that she went there and worked on herself, and I went there and worked on myself. And two halves do not make a whole. You can take two halves and dig yourself a deeper hole. But she was able to go work on her. I was able to go work on me. And it really is about the family. This is a family disease. I grew up in that. Everything about my family riddled with it. I told you, you're either in AA or you need to be, or you're dead. And we got to stop the cycle and change that at our house. We had an AA house. Once we bought that house, it became clear what that house was for. It had a big yard. It was for potlucks. And that's what that house was for. And then we got a little piece of shit motorhome, and it became clear what that motorhome was for. It was for newcomers. And we let people stay in there. And my kids knew Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't something we did. Alcoholics Anonymous became a part of our life, and it was okay. It was easy. It was so we are succeeding. We are thriving, and she sees this woman that's failing. And so Kari reaches out, and she tries to help. And this is very, very poignant for me. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, we had the opportunity to help this woman and her kids, and through that process, get guardianship of the oldest. And she came in and she lived with us, and she graduated from high school with honors, and went off on her way to college. And if there's nothing else I get from Alcoholics Anonymous, really all I'm old is physical sobriety. But to have the opportunity to affect the lives of my kids and other kids and be a positive example, I am tremendously overpaid. Career-wise, it's hit and miss, man. I mean, the only reason I have a career is because Alcoholics Anonymous. I am it's amazing how little I do and am able to get by. October of last, a year ago October, I got a call from San Diego. Prior to that, I worked for a nationwide outfit, and they had a position open up in Washington State, so we transferred up to Washington. I moved the wife and kids, and I moved up there. I get a call from a business associate in San Diego that wants to buy a general contractor, and if I'm willing to be part of it, he'll have me run a division. Sounds great. I will move back down to San Diego and be part of it. On day two, we find out that the reason the company's for sale is because it's $1 million in debt. How is that? What does that have to do with anything in Alcoholics Anonymous? Nothing, really. I'm not here to tell you if you get sober, you're going to get a career job, get to be part of a company purchase, or get your family back. What I'm here to share with you is my experience, what I did when that happened. I left Washington, moved to San Diego on a prayer that this was going to work out, and I get down there and find out it's totally freaking bankrupt. I got nothing. What do? I stay close to Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that if I try and please God, do the program, maybe try and help somebody else, I'm going to be okay. And I can't tell you how fantastically okay I've been. We're not hungry. We're not going without. Things aren't going the way that I want them to. But they're certainly going better than they were 13 years ago. And that's because Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not because of anything I've done. I thank you guys for sharing your time with me. I thank you for giving me a life, and I thank you for sharing your lives with me. Thanks, that's all I got.